Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. Russell Westbrook picked up his $47 million option, sending Laker fans into fits of celebration. Not really. But what does this mean going forward? How are they going to handle this relationship? Jovan Buha from The Athletic joins us. We'll get into all of it next.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, sometimes on weekends. No matter how you get your podcasts, where you get your podcasts, always fresh Lakers content up for you. Never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube lets you get the show a few hours earlier than the audio product itself goes up. Do want to let you know that Locked On Lakers is partnering with Arcade 1UP to give away three free NBA Jam Shaq machines. That's right, three of them. These are the guys that are known for making incredible three-quarter scale at-home arcade games like Pac-Man, Golden Tee, and many more. You enter to win on arcade1up.com/lockedon. That's arcade1up.com/lockedon. Get a chance to win one of those three bad boys. I did actually see one of those guys at a Best Buy I was at a couple days ago, and they are kind of cool. All right, Jovan Buha from The Athletic, one of our favorite guys to talk to whenever news is happening. He's been producing some of it, has some great stuff out at The Athletic about Malik Monk and his thoughts about returning the Lakers, perhaps with that taxpayer mid-level exception. So we're going to get to that over the course of the show. He's got a fantastic feature up about the relationship between the Arkansas boys, Austin Reeves and Malik Monk, and how that has developed. Curious to see if we think it'll continue over the course of the year. But we got to start with the big news of the day. Russell Westbrook picks up his $47 million option. He's not going to test the free agency waters. A major upset, I think, in everybody's mind, Jovan, or not necessarily. But what is the sort of mechanics behind this? How do the Lakers feel about it? What's going on here today?
Well, I think it's pretty straightforward, right? Like, Russ was never going to turn down $47.1 million. I mean, I think if he turned that down and hit the open market, he's looking at maybe the taxpayer mid-level exception. Like, I don't think anyone's paying him more than that. So as we saw, Kyrie Irving didn't turn
what
down.
What about like on an 8-year deal?
I mean, yeah, like, or he could be a minimum guy. Like, I don't know. But I mean, as we saw, Kyrie Irving did not turn down that $30 million difference, and Russell Westbrook did not turn down a $40 million difference at least. So I think it was pretty straightforward. I know from the Lakers side, I think there was some like minor optimism that with some of the recent messaging about you need to be a defense first guy and Darvin Ham not coming out and you know outright denying that Westbrook could potentially come off the bench, that maybe some of that messaging could get to Russ and maybe he is proud enough to say, hey, like I care more at this stage in my career about my role and starting and being the guy on a different team.
Hey, nobody's $47 million proud.
Yeah, but that's exactly. So, exactly. So, you know, Russ didn't turn it down. I think if you're the Lakers, you know, they're saying all the right things publicly, but I do know privately, like if they can move Russ, they're going to move Russ. And right now the issue has been, The going price is a minimum of a first-round pick to attach to him to dump him somewhere, and the Lakers do not want to give up a future first. And I think they're in a giant game of chicken with the rest of the league right now. Someone's going to cave at some point, I think, and we will eventually see a Westbrook trade, in my opinion. But you know, whether it's a team softening their stance and not demanding a first and just looking at the value of a Westbrook expiring, or the Lakers saying, hey, you know what, you know, we like the package we can get here. Let's attach a first to Russ. I do think they would attach a first for Kyrie Irving. I think another disgruntled star that could come in and be a third star, they would consider that. But aside from that, it does look like if it's going to be dumping him in OKC, dumping him on another team, they're not interested in attaching a first. And I think I think they're right to kind of have that mentality, but at some point I think you probably do have to cave and really consider the outlook of this team. And, you know, can you win a championship with Russ on your roster? And I don't think so with the current roster construction.
And we definitely want to get to some of the Kyrie news, because it is related both to Westbrook and the way the Lakers are thinking of roster building now and roster building in the future. And it's just been it's such a weird story. It's worth talking about a little more. But, you know, Darvin Ham was incredibly complimentary of Russ during his introductory press conference. The Lakers have done nothing but send out signals that they are on board with Russ. They want to make it work. They're excited to see what this could be with a bit of a reset and all that kind of stuff. What do you sense as Westbrook's, like sort of Team Westbrook's view of going into this season? Are we at a place where everybody can kind of pretend that we really are starting over and the bad blood is gone or whatever it might be?
Or not even pretend, depending on how people are feeling about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think Westbrook being at the introductory press conference for Darvin was a really good sign. And, you know, LeBron wasn't there. AD wasn't there, right? It was, and the other guys that were there are all guys who have been working out in the gym every day. So they just had like a workout and then came to watch the press conference. So
let's be honest, Jovan, they're sucking up. Like Stanley, you know, Austin.
Sure, Wenyan. Sure. But
guys are smart of Wenyan Gabriel
to
be
sucking
there,
up to the coach.
I mean, all those guys had team options, right? And that was smart. So, but then, I mean, reading between the lines is Russell Westbrook sucking up a little bit and trying to start his relationship with Darvin Ham off on a better foot. I mean, I think it's hard to get worse than the Frank Vogel situation. I mean, Russ was pretty straightforward and candid with his opinion of Frank, and you know, took a lot of subliminal shots at Frank throughout the season, and then in his exit interview just, you know, lit things on fire and really let it go. But also kind of lit the situation, like he took some shots at LeBron and AD, said that it wasn't true that those guys really encouraged him to be himself, and also took shots at the organization. So I think for the Lakers, again, I think publicly they are doing the right things with how they're handling this, but behind the scenes, I think they would move him in a heartbeat if the right trade was there. But with Russ, I'm not as plugged in to his camp, so I can't really speak to his stance as much, but I do think him opting in and kind of posting what he posted today, like it's a new day, I guess, for him. But I mean, it's going to require a level of sacrifice we have never seen from him in his NBA career. And even with sacrifice, there are certain things I don't know. He's not going to be a 40% 3-point shooter. He's not going to be an all defense level guard. And if you can't get that from him, I think there's a clear limitation to just what he can do with this group.
You are correct that a better relationship between Russ and Darvin Ham is not going to fix the flaws in Russ's game, if that's the way you want to refer to him. You know, it is what it is. I mean, he's not going to transform into a different player. But in terms of Russ actually buying into Darvin Ham more as a coach, as a man, however you want to define it, having some type of improved relationship between the two, an openness to just attempting the things that are needed from him, either working off ball, working period defensively, I think there can be incremental improvements and tangible effects from that. Even if he doesn't become, you know, less of an awkward player, I think just the willingness to do that can translate on the court, but also can, I think, translate throughout the locker room. Do you think there's any truth to that thought process?
Yeah, I do. I wonder if, I mean, at this point, Westbrook is going into his 15th season, and I think it's a lot to ask a star who I would say is no longer at a star level production-wise, but still views himself at that level. I mean, 18-7-7 is nothing to scoff at, but I think we all watched last season, and I think there was some emptiness in some of those numbers, and a lot of, you know, Russ would have like 8 points heading into the fourth quarter and end up with 18, and then his stat line looks fine, but in reality of his actual impact on the game, it wasn't necessarily reflected in the box score. So I think with him, there's just a lack, like there's nothing we've seen thus far to indicate that he is self-aware enough to make the changes that are required. And I mean, I think you could see some incremental changes, but I think the Lakers need drastic changes, really. Like, I think an incrementally better Russ helps, but I still think, you know, there's a lot of issues here that ideally a locked in Russ would kind of smooth things over a bit. And I mean, the fit never really made sense to begin with, right? But I think if you can see him, one of the things I recently wrote about on a story that's coming out in The Athletic is, went to Synergy and looked at it. He had 7 screening possessions as the role man last season, according to Synergy, which is kind of insane to think about. But like looking at it, like you see when Russ actually sets screens and sets drag screens in transition or even just screening for LeBron or AD, like the result is pretty impressive because of the gravity that those guys have. Russ can get downhill and get open. And then from that point, either get to the rim, kick out to a shooter, or kick out to another cutter, or, you know, find a cutter, you know, attacking the rim. So I think a lot of good things happen when Russ is active off the ball. The problem is Russ is rarely active off the ball. And then on the other side of the floor, defensively, he just, you know, didn't really care for a lot of the season. If you watch, you know, his effort getting around screens, rotating, helping, all those little things that you need, he just didn't really do. So that's maybe where I could see the biggest improvement for him is defense. But offensively, I think it's going to be a challenge because he's never done those things off.
Right. All right. I have a quick follow that I want to ask you about what you just said regarding Russ and some of those screening possessions and things like that. We also want to get to Malik Monk and the taxpayer mid-level exception. We have to talk about Kyrie Irving. We've got a lot of ground to cover in just 2 more segments with Jovan Buha from The Athletic, and we'll do it next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Sakara plant-rich, nutrient-dense meals, snacks, and supplements that nourish without sacrificing quality or taste. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. I've had their breakfasts, their lunches, and their dinners. They sent me a peach parfait for breakfast, which feels incredibly decadent for the morning, except it's totally healthy. The protein power plate is a great lunch or dinner. Curried green lentils, roasted cauliflower, rainbow carrot, a cooling coconut yogurt, turmeric flatbread. They got a great little French lentil soup, and it's all delivered to your door, ready to eat. From the best-selling metabolism superpower to the foundation and their daily supplement packs, Sakara's products are designed to support your wellness goals anytime, anywhere. And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to Sakara.com/LockedOn20 or just enter the code LockedOn20 at the checkout. That's Sakara, Sakara.com/LockedOn20 to get 20% off your first order. Again, Sakara.com/LockedOn20.
Again, quick reminder, the word is breakfasts, not breakfasts.
Breakfasts.
It's breakfasts. Trust me.
That is what it says in Webster's.
But more importantly, Andy, we mentioned earlier in this week welcoming a new partner to the show, Duer, D-U-E-R. These guys make the most incredibly comfortable clothes that are also incredibly versatile, particularly their pants. That's really what they're known for. It's performance clothing, but done with simplicity. They're clothes that adapt to what you're doing, whether that's a business meeting, a day on a hike, a bike ride, chasing your kids around the park or the playground, which is, you know, how I wear them. It's lifestyle clothing that crosses lifestyle and meets you where you are. The fabrics are soft, they're supple, they keep their shape while moving with you throughout the day. I got a pair of the jeans, I have the Live Free Adventure pants, I have the No Sweat Jogger. And you know, if you're interested in shirts, they make those too. Super lightweight, super comfortable, and they fit really well too. Not too big, not too tight. Really well put together in that way. If you're in Los Angeles, you should go to the Duer store. It's located at 170 South La Brea Avenue in Mid-City. And in-store or online at Duer.com, you can use our exclusive 15% off discount code. It's LockedOn15. Again, if you're in LA, go to the Duer store, 170 South La Brea Avenue in Mid-City.
Or you might see us there.
You could. Buying pants.
Yep.
Or you can go online. However you do it, LockedOn15 for a 15% off. That's the 15% off discount code. This stuff is incredibly comfortable. It will adapt to you. And it's worth checking out. So go to Duer.com or visit the store, D-U-E-R. Okay, so before we move on to Monk and to Kyrie, you just said something that I thought was really interesting. He set 7 screens, and you know, where he rolls to the basket.
It's assuming... one every 10 games, man. I don't know why everyone's on Russ's ass about this.
Right. You know, so, you know, and, you know, there are other, obviously other ways that you set screens throughout a season, but obviously this is not a way that he's being utilized very much. How much of that do you think is the fault of Russ just not engaging off the ball? How much of that is the system that they ran last year with Frank Vogel, and how much of that can be corrected with a new staff and a new offense?
I think it's a combination of both, but I do think it falls more on Russ, because I think, again, like going back to like, if you look at the, you know, the press conference that, you know, Russ's introductory press conference or media day and preseason and really the early regular season games, like there was a lot of the same talk of, we're going to figure out ways to effectively use Russ off the ball. You know, Russ is going to help lead the defense and be a point of attack guy and all this different stuff. And that did not materialize. And again, maybe, you know, the messenger in this case will be different with Darvin Ham, but these are all things that Russ had talked with LeBron and AD last offseason about when they were talking about getting together. And these are promises that he had made LeBron and AD that he did not, that he did not come through on. So I think a lot of people, you know, the people that were optimistic about the Russ fit were like, if anyone could convince Russ to do role player esque things on both sides of the ball, it's LeBron James. And the fact that LeBron could not get through to Russ consistently last season, I think, you know, that's kind of concerning. And again, maybe Darvin Ham somehow gets through to him. But if he does, that would be the first time in Russ's career, especially kind of post MVP, that he has listened to a coach and really bought into a team system.
Russ ended up opting in after Kyrie made his decision. We're going to get to the Kyrie Lakers connection, which is connected obviously to Russ, in a second. Also, after the Rockets worked out their buyout with John Wall, he's going to be joining the Clippers. The timing of that, is it coincidence, or do you think he waited this long? You know, it was obviously his option to wait, but in part to give himself the most control over the situation, because you can't trade him until he's officially opted in.
I don't know for certain, but I think what you're kind of onto something there with just the strategy behind when he chose to opt in. You know,
his Instagram post about opting in was rather triumphant, singing that Beyonce song, "You Ain't Gonna Break My Soul."
Yeah. So I think there's something there, but I think, To the Kyrie point, like, I don't think that's over yet. You know, I think there's a domino to fall with Kevin Durant. And as there, you know, there have been reports out that he has not spoken with the Nets front office, and that hasn't been the best relationship this offseason. And I think if KD were to demand a trade or ask out of Brooklyn, you know, the logical, you know, they could be traded together, but that's a lot of outgoing salary that you're going to have to match. Maybe potentially with an Anthony Davis and a Russell Westbrook. Or, you know, if Kevin Durant is going somewhere else, I don't see Brooklyn all of a sudden changing their stance and being like, let's keep Kyrie Irving without Kevin Durant. So I think logically,
even Kevin, if they get Russ in the process, that doesn't change anything.
Like, well, I mean, you could have you could have a three team trade with OKC or something where, you know, I think in that case, the Lakers would obviously have to send out picks and probably both picks. And maybe it's a situation where Brooklyn gets a pick, OKC gets a pick. I don't know if, you know, they're willing to do it at that point, but if you're Brooklyn looking at it, if you can get, I mean, if you have, you know, Russell Westbrook versus Kyrie Irving, you're more in tanking mode, right? And you're kind of more in that rebuilding setting, right? And then, but if you could also get a pick or two out of that from the Lakers, like, I think that's more attractive. And then maybe look to dump some longer term salary off your books. So, I mean, I think it's less likely that Kyrie Irving is on the Lakers, you know, now versus 24 hours ago, 36 hours ago. But I think some people writing it off entirely, I still think there's a scenario in which he could force his way there. I think it's more likely via trade now than it was
I would be very interested in watching the Kyrie Russ post game press conferences, the dual press conferences that stars like to do these days. Those would certainly be kind of lit. How you mentioned, like, you know, it seems like a longer shot than it was, you know, 36 hours ago, 24 hours ago. How deeply engaged were the Lakers in this process of trying to make Kyrie Irving a Laker?
They were deeply engaged. You know, I think LeBron was on board with it. the front office was on board with it. I mean, again, I think flipping Russ for Kyrie would still present some headaches, and you would still have some potential downside there. But the fit would clearly be, I mean, Kyrie is just a much better fit alongside Anthony Davis and LeBron James as a pick and roll partner, as a catch and shoot guy, as someone to really, I think, attack closeouts, attack on the weak side. He is, I think, offensively a much better fit. Defensively, probably a better fit too. I think he's a slightly underrated defense. I mean, they're kind of a wash, but yeah, like it's you know. So, and then I mean, of course, there would be the kind of the locker room stuff that comes with it, and the media stuff that comes with it, and but there's a lot of that stuff that comes with Russ too. So I think if anything, you know, it might be an upgrade with Kyrie, but I think the Lakers were looking at. I mean, I don't think it was ever that realistic that he was going to take the taxpayer MLE again, giving up a lot of money, but
I never thought there was a chance in hell.
He could have re-signed with the Lakers for a lot more money next offseason. You know, that would have been a possibility. Although I think that's technically tampering depending on, you know, promising
even
future
then,
contracts and stuff.
He would be without the Lakers doing, some gymnastics to make it happen. He still
there would have to be some gymnastics,
right? He wouldn't be able to get that max level deal,
correct,
without the Lakers having to do a lot. And they might not have ever had. He'd be putting a lot of money at risk, not just this year, but also in the future as well. So,
correct.
You know, nobody's that iconoclastic.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone were, it would be Kyrie. But I guess, you know, technically there was just the option before for him to opt out and for him to sign with them. That is no longer there. So just like. Mathematically, however minuscule those odds were, it's just lower now. And then you also had the Russ situation of, you know, what was he going to do? But I think it's slightly lower, but I don't think it's, you know, I think the most likely, you know, scenario in which Kyrie would end up on the Lakers was going to be a trade. And Russ opted in, Kyrie opted in. They both can still be traded. So, I, you know, that was going to have to be the base of the trade. So I don't see why those odds would necessarily shift dramatically, you know, with the developments of the past 24 hours.
I was going to say, speaking of guys with economic decisions to make, you have been in the Malik Monk business over the last week or so. You've got two really good pieces involving Malik, one with a lot of exclusive quotes from him that we're going to address first about his future with the Lakers, including a potential willingness to take less than his market value to stay with the Lakers. One of the quotes was, "Money is always a part, man, but I don't think it's the biggest priority in my free agency this year. It's me feeling like I'm having a home and I can go out there and do the same things I did last year." Did you get a sense of how big of a haircut Malik was potentially willing to take, but also like how big of a deal he actually thinks he could be getting on the open market? Because that would inform in a lot of ways just what type of sacrifice he could be making for the Lakers.
Well, he said in one of the quotes, you know, $5 million less. And I thought that was telling because the Lakers, the most they could offer him is the taxpayer MLE, which is worth about 6.4, 6.5 million. So $5 million less would be Malik getting somewhere around 10, 11 million, which could be the full, you know, non-taxpayer MLE. So I think that was kind of what he was saying. What was like, you know, I would maybe turn down the full non-taxpayer MLE for the taxpayer MLE from the Lakers. But you know, that's the Lakers' primary resource to improve the roster. And I think from what I've heard and really just looking at the roster, like they don't necessarily need another undersized guard that is, you know, something of a defensive liability. They need 3-and-D wings. And you know, I have it coming out on The Athletic, but like from what I've heard, like that has been their primary discussion right now is they're looking to use their taxpayer MLE on one or two wings that they think can start and play big roles on this team. So, you know, while Malik technically I think would be their best wing if they end up re-signing him, he does come with some limitations as a 6'2", 6'3", you know, offense only type of guy. So I think depending on what names are available, you could see them, you know, lean into to trying to re-sign him. And, you know, I think there are certain wings that I think they'd prioritize him over. But if they could get an Otto Porter Jr. or one of the Martin brothers, I think they would look at those guys probably over him and try to get more of that 3-and-D type of wing. So I still think more likely than not, Malik ends up getting the non-taxpayer mid-level exception from another team, going somewhere to either be the starting shooting guard or the sixth man. But in the case that he does return to the Lakers, I think it would have to be the full, you know, taxpayer MLE, and that's the Lakers' only resource. So I think that would, you know, I don't know if that's the best move for them in just building out this roster with what they currently have.
You mentioned 3-and-D wings and players like that. It is a thin market for wings. There's no question. We did a lot, answered some questions over the course of the week about how the Lakers might approach free agency in terms of, you know, whether they are going to look for names that people recognize, more veteran players, Wes Matthews, guys like that, or whether they're going to lean heavily into going young. Would love to get your opinion on what to look for Thursday when free agency opens. We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all the latest sports development, league reviews, and news, including baseball, boxing, MMA, golf, NFL futures, NBA futures, and more. Speaking of NBA futures, it is never too early to put a little action on the 2023 NBA championship. As expected, the Golden State Warriors are the clubhouse leader at 21-4, followed by the Clippers, and those odds actually moved when they acquired John Wall. Whether you think they actually should move or not, they did, followed by Boston at 6-1, the Bucks at 6-1, the Nets at 7-1, Phoenix at 12-1, and then the Lakers coming in at 14-1 ahead of Denver, Miami, Dallas, Memphis, the the Sixers, the Pelicans. You got to love Laker fans and their willingness to always bet on their team. Bet Online is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. So head to the website today, use your mobile device, learn more about the trends in action. Bet Online, where the games start.
So, okay, where do they go? Because, you know, the Lakers, Jovan, they, like you said, they don't have a lot of resources. The wing market is very thin. You can make an argument that Malik is the best player, just raw player, they could get for $6 million. But even beyond that, how do you expect them to kind of attack free agency with all these veteran minimums that they have to give people? Last year, it was Trevor Ariza and Carmelo Anthony and Dwight Howard and generally older players like that. Where do you think they'll look this year?
I think they're going to definitely trend younger. That is something that Rob Pelinka has been emphasizing is, you know, I asked them on draft night, is the players that you guys just drafted kind of a reflection of the type of players you're going to be looking for? You know, Max Christie is a projected 3-and-D wing. You know, Cole Swider is a three-point shooter. Scottie Pippen is more of a kind of athletic defensive guard. So, like, are these the types of players that you're looking to fill out your rotation with? And he said, you know, exactly. Like, we're looking for two-way guys that can shoot the ball and play defense. And that's kind of what everyone's looking for in the NBA right now. So, again, like, you know, I think the Lakers, what the Lakers can offer that most other teams, I think, with playoff aspirations can offer is they can offer a giant role. You know, like, if you're a TJ Warren or an Otto Porter Jr. that come to the Lakers, play 30 to 34 minutes a night, start, get all the visibility of being on national TV 25, 30, 35 times during the season, and your next contract either with us or with another team can be a lot bigger. And kind of the Malik Monk bump, right? Like, I think they can kind of pitch people on, hey, you know, look at what Malik was able to do and look at the new contract he's going to sign because he was with us. And, you know, it was not, I mean, there are other guys that had similar seasons to Malik Monk that aren't getting the same buzz because they didn't play for the Lakers. So I think their appeal isn't as strong as it used to be, even as recently as a couple of years ago. And you saw like the John Wall situation where he picks the Clippers over potentially going to the Lakers, and you're just different. The buyout market this season was not, you know, Laker heavy, but I do think for them, it's really going to be using their resources primarily on wings. I think if you look at the roster, they need guys in that 6'6 to 6'9 range. The plan from what I've heard is, you know, start AD at center, start LeBron at the 3 or the 4, and then find another wing that could slot in there, and then maybe start Austin and Russ in the backcourt. So I think they're going to use their financial resources primarily on wings, and then you'll see they're going to need a backup center of some kind, but there's a lot of center depth, and you can find some quality guys for minimum contracts, and then probably one more guard. But I think between Russ, Kendrick, Austin, and Talen, like you're kind of loaded there, you know, so to speak, in the backcourt where there just aren't a lot of minutes. So I think they're kind of set in the backcourt. I expect them to at least sign one more guard, but I think it's really going to be multiple wings and then maybe like a center and another guard.
You in your piece with Malik, one of the things that comes up is that in deciding all the pros and cons with whatever team he's going to sign, and you know, if it was the Lakers, taking less than his open market value, all that stuff would be the competitiveness of the team, because Malik has never been to the playoffs. He wants to change that moving forward. And you know, whether somebody like Malik or an Otto Porter Jr. or a Caleb Martin, like somebody who's been on a good team, a team that's gone a few rounds in the playoffs, they would be determining how competitive they think the Lakers are going to be moving forward, because that might inform their decisions as well. In talking with Malik, just because I think it might reflect a little bit of just the overall perception, did you get an idea of how competitive he actually thinks the Lakers are going to be moving forward? Like if last season was just sort of everything that could possibly go wrong went wrong, and it's a bit of an aberration that way, or if he's, you know, not necessarily that confident that they can get considerably better.
I think he's optimistic that they can get better. And I think if the Lakers had their non-taxpayer MLE available and they were willing to offer that to Malik, he would sign in a heartbeat. Like I know he really has enjoyed his time in LA and would love to be back. The sense I got with Malik really was that for him, you know, he did not enjoy his time in Charlotte, and feels kind of he was never given the clear opportunity that a lot of lottery picks are afforded. And because of that, and because of last offseason, you know, only the Lakers and Mavericks coming after him and making him an offer, like he wants to be wanted. And I think really the sense I got is like, you know, the money is always important. He's not going to sign a minimum deal. And I think competitiveness is important, role is important, playing time, all that stuff. But I think Malik really wants a good pitch where you're saying, hey, Malik, we want you, we believe in you, we want you to be here for multiple years, and we want you a part of what we're doing moving forward. So I think where he ends up, you're probably going to see a version of that, of like, Malik's our starting shooting guard of the future. Malik's our sixth man of the future. We want him here for the next half decade. And that's what I think Malik is looking for, that NBA home, because he has not had that so far. And again, like I think if the money were different, it would be with the Lakers, but I suspect it's probably going to be elsewhere.
My last question for you, you know, before we let you go, is how credible do you think that is? I don't even mean so much just with the Lakers and their reputation for, you know, trading anything that moves for a star or whatever it might be. I just mean generally in the league, the idea that a team can sell a player on, you're our guy of the future, we want you around here for a long time and all that. But I think it is particularly acute with teams like the Lakers that are very star driven and will package salaries together to make something like that happen.
Well, I think that's probably a situation where money and years talk. Like if you offer Malik 3 years, $30 million, like you are committing a solid amount of salary and multiple
sure.
years to him. So,
but not necessarily. But not necessarily the idea that he's going to be here is my.
Sure. I think there's always. I mean, look, like I mean, we could just go back a few years with the Blake Griffin situation and the mock jersey retirement and
right.
you know the t-shirts and stuff. Like I think NBA players know that there is a lack of loyalty league wide. But I also think that there are certain, you know, like Danny Ainge had developed that reputation in Boston of, he will trade anybody for anything. I think the Lakers also have a similar reputation of, if they can throw you in a deal for a star, they will do so. And then there are some organizations that are a little bit more loyal and you know, kind of have that perception of they'll at least, I mean, the Lakers have that definitely for stars, which I think has made them attractive to stars, of like, you know, they will go out of their way to cater to their stars and make them comfortable and whatnot. But I mean, yeah, I think across the league, like there's really no loyalty anymore on both sides, honestly. You know, you see more player movement than ever, and you also see more transactions and teams cutting guys, trading guys. So I think that is kind of gone, but there's also kind of the lip service element of like, I think Malik wants to be wowed with a pitch, and you know, can the Lakers do that? Can someone else do that? But also, again, for the Lakers, I just think if it's Otto Porter Jr. versus Malik Monk, like Malik might be the better player, but Otto Porter Jr. gives you what you need on the wing. And I think he's someone that could be available, but he also might get the non-taxpayer mid-level, and then Lakers can't really, you know, compete if that's his offer. But I think like names like that are what you should be looking for. And I think what we'll see in what 36 hours or so, you know, what ends up happening.
I wonder if Joel Silver and Toby Maguire are available to make a pitch for Malik Monk like they did Carmelo Anthony so many years ago. We didn't get a chance to get into it, but you know, he's talking about the stuff that he wrote with Malik in terms of his contract and that feature. Make sure we tweet it out. We'll retweet it. His great feature with Austin Reeves and Malik talking about their connection in Arkansas. It is a really fun story with the two guys probably the only bright spots in last season, and you know, hopefully get a chance to see that relationship continue.
The Arkansas boys.
That's right. Jovan Buha, he is one of the best basketball writers out there. We thank you so much for taking the time to do this. We know it is becoming a very busy time for basketball writers like yourself. Reminder, Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to get the podcast. You get that a little earlier, shows like this one. And Duer, D-U-E-R, go get the world's most comfortable pants. They are insanely comfortable.
Try them out, Jovan. You will not regret it.
It's true. Locked On 15 gets 15% off at the store on South La Brea or online. We'll see everybody on Thursday.